Good afternoon, everyone. As we all know, our conference theme is Christian privileges and responsibilities. As I understand it, and please underline those words, as I understand it, Romans 12 and 1 is a verse of scripture which addresses both concepts. In the King James Version, Romans 12 and 1 reads, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. Present your bodies a living sacrifice, a privilege or a responsibility. Your reasonable service, a privilege or a responsibility. Almost every word in that verse would stand a discourse on its own. But today I just like to focus on the two I've underlined, or the two phrases or clauses or whatever they are. Present your bodies a living sacrifice. What does that mean? Is it a privilege or a responsibility? And your reasonable service. As we know, different translators have used different English words to translate the same Greek words. For example, the Diaglot reads, I entreat you, therefore, brethren, by the tender compassions of God, to present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, well-pleasing to God, your rational, religious service. And so they've introduced the word religious there, which does not appear in the King James Version. Why do they do it? Is it different from the King James Version? Is it the same? Likewise, I go to the New International Version, NIV. Now, that reads just in part, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God, this is your spiritual act of worship. So rather than being your reasonable service, we now have your spiritual act of worship. Is it the same thing? For a while, I did not think so. Until I referred to the margin in the NIV. And the margin in the NIV says, this is your reasonable act of worship. So we see a return to the word reasonable. I then go to the Revised Version. Revised Version in the plain text is the same as the King James Version, which is your reasonable service. But in the Revised Version margin, it says, to present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, well-pleasing to God, which is your spiritual worship. And so the margin in the Revised Version uses the same English word as the NIV. What is the truth? And so I had to resort to concordances now to try to figure out just what is the appropriate word, what is the correct concept, if indeed they are different, or are they indeed the same? Now, Strong's Concordance defines reasonable, and the Greek word of which it comes is logikos, which I can readily assimilate or assume to be logical, rational. And it's used only twice. That Greek word is used in Romans 12 and 1, which is our theme text, and also in 1 Peter 2, 2 and 2. In 1 Peter 2 and 2, the word logikos is translated as newborn babes desire the sincere milk of the word, that ye may grow thereby. And those three words of the word are a translation of that one Greek word, logikos. Desire the sincere milk of the word. What's that mean to us? Well, to me it means that the expression is an abstract term, or I am prepared to say it's a metaphor, because the word doesn't have literal milk, and therefore it's calling some part of the word, the simple truths, they're calling out milk. So rational service is an abstract term, it's not a concrete term. Whether that goes any, whether it means any more than that, I don't know. But we keep looking. That was reasonable service. What about service itself? Well, the Greek word service is latria, and Strong defines that as being a ministration of God, that is, a worship. And so from that definition of the word latria, I can well understand why the New International Version uses the word worship, and why the margin in the Revised Version uses the word worship. Ministration of God, that is, worship. That's Strong's Concordance definition. Young's Concordance says public or reverential service. So Young defines it, uses different English words to define the word latria. Is there a difference? And so that's about all I can derive from reasonable service. It's a fairly general term. This is your reasonable service. And that's about where I stop. So then, referring to the first expression which attracted my attention, have I gone backwards there, have I? I have too. Just going back to Romans 12 and 1. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, and by the word I said before that there's almost every word here would stand a sermon on its own. And the word beseech is one of those. There's an enormous depth to the word beseech, far more, I think, than some of the English words. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God. Does that imply a privilege? By the mercies of God? That ye present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. So what does it mean to present your bodies a living sacrifice? Well, again, I've resorted to the concordance to try and figure out just what that means. To present your bodies a living sacrifice. According to Strong's Concordance, the Greek word is thousia, or something like that, which he just defines as a sacrifice, the act or the victim, literally or figuratively. So it's a very large scope word, a word with a very wide potential meanings. It's a sacrifice. That's the only way in which this Greek word is translated in the King James Version, is translated as sacrifice. Young translates or interprets as being a slaughter, a slaughtered animal. And so Young here really is talking about the victim. Strong says either the act or the victim. But Young focuses on the victim, a slaughtered animal. But the fact that the Greek word is translated in the King James Version only as sacrifice, what does that mean? Now, the King James Version, of course, was authorised in the early part of the 17th century. And so, to me, we have to go back to what the English word meant at that time to get the proper meaning of the word sacrifice. Just what did sacrifice convey to the people at that time? Now, I haven't got a dictionary which comes back to 1611. So the best I could do was to go to my concise Oxford dictionary. And that says that as meaning number two, and there are several meanings given in the Oxford dictionary, meaning number two is giving up one thing, giving up of a thing for the sake of another, and the loss thus entailed. And so the definition in the Oxford dictionary for sacrifice embraces both the thoughts in Strong's Concordance, both the act and the victim. The giving up of something for the sake of another, and enduring the loss of the same. That brings to mind two things. First of all, it says giving up of a thing. If we give up, we can either do it voluntarily or we can do it by compulsorily under request. And so I see here where there could be a difference between a sacrifice and a tax. A tax is something we give up, not necessarily willingly via income tax, but nevertheless we give it up and we suffer loss, do we not? Whereas also we have to endure that loss. So the idea of sacrifice is it voluntarily giving up of themselves and then suffering the consequent loss. Remember that Strong's Concordance said that sacrifice means either the act or the victim. And I can see why Strong uses that definition, because back in Old Testament times, it referred to both. But for example, during the Exodus, in Exodus 10, 24 and 25, we read that Pharaoh called unto Moses and said, "Go ye, serve the Lord, only let your flocks and your herds be saved." So he wanted the Jews, Israelites, to go, but leave their livestock behind. And Moses said, "Thou must give us also sacrifices and burnt offerings, that we may sacrifice unto the Lord our God." So back in those days, sacrifice clearly had the meaning of the victim, and also the act that they were going to offer the sacrifice. And the two things I mentioned before about a sacrifice being voluntary and suffering the loss also applied in the Old Testament. In Leviticus chapter 1 and verse 3, we read, "If his offering," and maybe we should just recap a little bit. The book of Leviticus is what? The book of the law. It spells out all the details of the law. It doesn't tell you just what the law is itself, but it tells you is the details. This is the book of the law. And so this is the law. What is the law? "If his offering be a burnt sacrifice of the herd," and that's the ones that Pharaoh wanted to leave behind, "let him offer a male without blemish. He shall offer it of his own voluntary will." A sacrifice, not a tax, a sacrifice. "At the door of the tabernacle of the congregation before the Lord." So that's the sacrificing of a victim, an animal. Burnt sacrifice. Kill it first and then burn it. Does the same thing apply to us today? Well, it certainly applied in the Apostles' time, because we think of the stoning of Stephen. "And when the blood of thy martyr Stephen was shed, I also was standing by and consenting unto his death, and kept the raiment of them that slew him." So in that sense, Stephen wasn't slaughtered like the beasts were in the Old Testament times, but he suffered to the extent of giving up his whole life. He was stoned. And so We must be prepared to do the same thing in the ultimate sense. We have to be prepared to be a victim. We have to be prepared to suffer unto death, as Revelation 2:10 says. Fear none of those things which thou shalt suffer. Behold, the devil shall cast some of you into prison, that ye may be tried, and ye shall have tribulation 10 days. Be thou faithful unto death. And so we, as professing Christians, have to be prepared to suffer loss, to be a sacrifice unto our own physical death. I mean, we use that expression so much. But, you know, I often wonder whether it really sinks in to me. What does that really mean? We have to be prepared to suffer unto death. We need to be a sacrifice unto death. Is that a privilege or an obligation? I don't think we are. I don't think Romans 12:1 is talking about that as being our sacrifice. That part of our sacrificial conviction certainly is true. We have to be prepared to be to suffer unto death. But I don't believe now that Romans 12:1 is talking about that aspect of our sacrifice. You see, Romans 12:1 says, Romans 12:1, we're talking about a living sacrifice. Offer your bodies a living sacrifice. What does the word living mean? Well, according to Strong's Concordance again, it means to live, literally or figuratively. And it's translated as life, lifetime, alive, live, lively, quick. And it occurs 142 times, which we haven't got time for to go through today. So we see there that, to me, it's talking about our current lifetime. We are living sacrifices, not victims on the altar after death, as indeed the animals were in Old Testament time. The challenge to us is to be a living sacrifice now, during our lifetime. During our lifetime. What does that mean in terms of practice? Well, 1 John 3:16-20 reads, "Hereby perceive we the love of God." And I know that the word "of God" is supplied, and I personally prefer to leave it out. "Hereby we perceive the love, because he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. But whoso hath this world's good, and seeth his brother have need, and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him? My little children, let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed and in truth." That tells me that part of our sacrifice, part of our living sacrifice, is being prepared to give up voluntarily part of the material goods that we have to help another. We have to love in deed and in truth. And that, of course, was the case in the Apostles' day. We read in Philippians 4:18, this is Paul writing to Philippians, "But I have all, and abound. I am full, having received of Epaphroditus the things which were sent from you, an odour of a sweet smell, a sacrifice acceptable, well-pleasing to God." So the fellow believers in that time had sacrificed, had voluntarily given up some of their physical wherewithal to help the Apostle Paul. And if we believe that we are of the truth, then we must also do the same. That's one part of our living sacrifice, as I now see it. Another part of our living sacrifice is, what else do we give up? if we are a follower of our master. What else do we give up? Well, I think of Luke chapter 6 and verse 22. Blessed are ye when men shall hate you. That's a sacrifice. You see, we don't need to forego favoritism, popularity. But if we are sincere and true to our conviction, we will. We will. And that is a voluntary act. Blessed are ye when men shall hate you, and when they shall separate you from their company. Are we prepared to wear that sacrifice, to bear the loss of popularity? And shall reproach you? The next step, not just isolate themselves from you, but speak evil things of you. They reproach you and cast out your name as evil for the Son of Man's sake. So those unfavourable, in human terms, effects, results, consequences of our conviction have to be for the Son of Man's sake, not for our own ego. Luke even goes on in verse 26. Woe unto you when all men shall speak evil of you, for so did their fathers to the false prophets. Woe unto you when all men shall speak wrong of you. What a demanding statement that is. Now I know when the apostle wrote that, or Jesus said that, all men speak well of you, he wasn't talking about fellow believers, but all of those outside the circle. And that applies to us also. Outside the circle, all men speak evil. For so did they, their fathers, the false prophets. That's one of the sacrifices that we have to be prepared to give up voluntarily and to suffer the loss of our sacrifice, our living sacrifice. 1 Peter 2, 11-14, we read, along the same lines, dearly beloved, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims. Just how powerful are those words? I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts, which war against the soul. Another sacrifice that we make during our earthly life. Abstaining from fleshly lusts, lust of the eyes, lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. Having your conversation or conduct honest among the Gentiles. Another obligation of ours. We have to be sure that we are honest in all things. So that, whereas they speak against you as evildoers, that they may, by your good works, which they shall behold, glorify God in the day of visitation. I believe we need to keep that clearly in mind throughout our pilgrimage here on earth, throughout our time of giving ourselves a living sacrifice, that we have to keep in mind that while they will speak evil of us now, while we might reproach now, that eventually they will glorify God in the day of visitation, provided we do all things which are honourable. Peter goes on, submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake. What does that mean? Submit yourselves to every ordinance of man. Well, the ordinances of man are simply the civil laws, the laws of our society. That's telling me that we don't deliberately contravene the law. We are law abiders. We aren't lawmakers, but we are law abiders, and it's obligatory on us to comply with the law. And sometimes that's a sacrifice, You'd like to do something else? The silly law? Get around it? No, we should submit ourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether it be to the king as supreme or unto governors. For so is the will of God. That is our commission at this time. It's an obligation and also a commandment. And so, in summary, Hebrews 13 from verses 12 to 17. Wherefore, Jesus also, that he might sanctify the people with his own blood, suffered without the gate. Let us go forth therefore unto him without the camp. What does that mean? Let us, voluntarily, each one, not bound, we can decide whether we go to him without the camp or whether we don't. Let us, a voluntary action, a sacrifice, and we'll suffer the losses. Unto him without the camp. What's that mean? Well, of course, the camp was where the congregation of Israel was. And so in symbolic terms, metaphorical terms, we need to be prepared to go unto him outside of society, leave society. We don't strive for popularity. We don't strive for greatness in their eyes. Let us go unto him without the camp. It'll cost us. Let's do it. For here we have no continuing city, but we seek one to come. And so how important it is to keep in mind always the reward. We seek one to come. By him, therefore, let us offer the sacrifice of praise to God continually. Sacrifice of praise. That is the fruit of our lips, giving thanks to his name, not to ours. Put ourselves down, keep ourselves out of the limelight, giving thanks to God always, acknowledging that all we have is because God has granted it to us. And so then, Romans 12 and 1 to me is such a powerful verse. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice during our lifetime, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service, which indeed is your spiritual worship.